Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Looking for a new way to grow your business? With TikTok for Business, anything is possible. If you've ever thought about advertising on TikTok, now's the time to do it. You can drive more customers to your website, sell products right in the app, and you can even use TikTok's creative tools to easily make content and find creators to help sell your products for you. Find new customers today. Just open your browser, type in getstarted.tiktok.com/tiktokads, and grow your business fast.
There's nothing like gaining a fresh perspective from experts who've seen it all and have the wisdom to prove it. With MasterClass, you can learn from the best to become your best. With plans starting at $10 a month, billed annually, you get unlimited access to over 200 plus classes taught by the world's best business leaders, writers, chefs, and more. With MasterClass, you get thousands of bite-sized lessons across 13 categories that can fit into even the busiest of schedules. And the classes really make a difference. 3 in 4 surveyed members feel inspired every time they watch MasterClass. And 83% of surveyed members have applied something they've learned from MasterClass to their lives. MasterClass always has great offers during the holidays, sometimes up to as much as 50% off. Head over to masterclass.com/audio for the current offer. That's up to 50% off at masterclass.com/audio. masterclass.com/audio.
Can a case be made that Geno Smith might have saved Pete Carroll from a forced retirement?
You could probably have that. It's a good question, Ray, and as a longtime sports writer, I'm not surprised you asked it. I don't think so.
I
think Pete was on pretty solid ground.
So am I.
I think that When Jody Allen had a meeting last year and was faced with a decision between Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson, essentially, she chose Pete Carroll. She chose culture over quarterback, which I think most people disagreed with at the time. And I think she was very smart. It's hard to find a franchise quarterback. It might be even harder to find a legitimate franchise coach like Pete is. And she knew it was going to take it some time in all likelihood to rebuild this roster and certainly to find the ideal quarterback. I don't know whether Geno's that guy or not. We'll see what happens this offseason. Pete made some allusion to the fact that maybe they're okay in their system going with, you know, another quarterback, maybe Drew Locke, maybe somebody else, and maybe they'll end up drafting a guy in the top five. But I don't think so. I think Pete's on pretty solid ground, and people have been wondering about it for a while. And every year, it turns out he knows exactly what he's doing and seems to have quite a bit of respect from the people above him.
Mike Salk knows everything going on up in Seattle. Your answer doesn't need to be longer than 20 seconds because it's a hockey question. How big are the Kraken? Is it still working up there? Are the Kraken still like team du jour up in Seattle?
Well, they won 6 in a row. They're pretty good this year. They're heading into Boston tomorrow for a huge matchup with the really, really good Bruins. I'm into it, but I grew up in the Northeast. I grew up in Boston, and hockey's kind of in my blood. We don't talk a ton about it, and, you know, I'm not sure how much the fans are ready for that kind of conversation, but it's fun, and when they do make the playoffs, Seattle's certainly a town that'll support a winner, and I think they will by this year.
Will you have an NBA team in the next decade?
Yes, as soon as one is available. I mean, the building is ready for it. I mean, this building is magnificent, if you guys haven't been up. It really is an absolutely gorgeous building. And it's ready for hockey, and the Log Wikis and the folks who built it are in touch with the NBA. Their owner, David Bonderman, is a minority owner with the Celtics. As soon as there's a team ready to expand or move, they're coming here. It's just a matter of when, not if.
I said I was going to ask one more question, but I'm asking one more question. Once the Seahawks are done, does it become a Kraken town for a while?
Well, don't forget about our other team that just made the playoffs for the first time in 20 years. I mean, there is a pretty significant buzz around the Mariners right now. They haven't had a huge offseason, but they, you know, ended this gigantic playoff drought. They got young Julio Rodriguez, who might be the most exciting young player in baseball right now. They got a really great young pitching staff. They traded for Luis Castillo, who was a legitimate ace. I don't know. I mean, the Mariners have a pretty good case to say that right now it's a Mariner town more than even a Seahawks town.
Hey, San Francisco is a Mitch Haniger town. What do you think of that?
Oh, you guys are going to love Mitch. He's such a great dude and such a fun player to watch when he's healthy. And obviously that last statement is huge. He just hasn't been healthy consistently. And it's not always been his fault. He's had these freak injuries, right? I mean, you guys know about his midsection injury that kept him out a couple years ago. And you feel terrible for him because he's a grinder and he's a really, really good hitter when he's on. You guys will like Mitch. Fun, great, fun dude and just a really, really good, solid baseball player.
Mike Sauk, fun dude, really, really good, solid radio talk guy. Thank you so much for joining us today, man. And we plan to home and home. I'll talk to you on Friday morning.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it, Damon and Bray. Thank you. Huge fan of yours as well.
I'll give it time. That'll blow over.
There he is. Mike Sauk on 95.7 The Game. That is the most comprehensive interview about Seattle sports in the history of any interview that ever took place outside of the city of Seattle, I'm guessing. It was comprehensive, Ray.
We covered it.
We didn't get any. What's their MLS team?
The Sounders.
The Sounders.
That's a fairly big deal. They draw like 30,000 a game, and that's like 30,000 real people, not 30,000 chairs. So Seattle's a good sports town. You just have to show them that you don't suck. And I was, fascinated to hear how Carroll was safe no matter what happened this year. But I really do believe that Geno Smith might have actually saved him from the forced retirement, because he is 71. He's older than Belichick. And you start hitting that slide where you're not making the playoffs often, all of a sudden people start looking at you going, you're too old for this gig. And it looks like he showed this year that he's not only not too old, but he's still sort of cutting edge.
And look, Geno did an awful lot to keep public pressure off of his back. I mean, it's not a ravenous media town in terms of driving people out of town, but whoever was going to write that column didn't even really get the chance to write that column. And because we both agree that there's way too much credit given to quarterbacks in the NFL for overall team success, it really takes a team to get it done. John Schneider did as much to save Pete from an early retirement. I mean, these two guys have been one of the most successful head coaching and GM tandems in the league. I mean, they are in the playoffs the year after they move on from Russell Wilson and Bobby Wagner. Those are the last two holdovers from the Super Bowl roster. And 10 out of 13 years, they're in the postseason. Even with a trip up of maybe Geno wasn't the guy, how do you say goodbye to someone who is, without a doubt, the best head coach in the history of your franchise? And John Schneider, we could sit around and talk about great GMs in sports and probably not get to him just because Seattle, out of sight, out of mind. That's just the way that city works as a sports town. But the truth is, he just dropped one of the single best rookie classes we have seen battle-tested in a rookie year in a real, real long time. I guess here's a question. Their two rookie tackles, Charlie Cross and Abraham Lucas, what are they still rookies? When do they cease being rookies?
When their second season starts. They're rookies now.
All right, but first season has ended, so are they still technically rookies? No, I don't know.
I think it's when the next season starts.
But whatever, battling semantics, you got two tackles. You got Kenneth Walker III, who has really shown up in his rookie year and given you 9 touchdowns, a 4.6 average, and over 1,000 yards. Kobe Bryant, C-O-B-Y, not K-O-B-E, but Kobe Bryant. This guy's a fourth-round corner who forces fumbles. He's been making plays in their secondary all year long. John Schneider is responsible for drafting their 2,000-yard receivers, DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. Their tight end, Noah Fant, acquired in the trade that sent Russ to the Denver Broncos. Their second tight end, Will Disley, isn't bad. I had to pick him up on emergency waivers in fantasy football, and Will Disley actually, in the weeks that I carried him on my roster, did pretty good things for me.
That's really the standard for greatness, whether he made you money.
Well, I'm just saying, there's not a lot of second tight ends who are actually a little bit of a threat. Like, Will Disley is a little bit more of a threat to score a touchdown on you than most second tight ends are anywhere in the league. And as Mike brought up, Tariq Woolen, his six interceptions would have led the 49ers in the same category. He is a lockdown corner. So that's going to make things a little bit more difficult for the 49ers offense this weekend. But man, there is something that he also brought up, Mike just did, and he's totally right about it. And it's one of the things that we're going to talk about, how Seattle's defense is basically built in the mirror opposite image of the 49ers defense. The 49ers are an absolute long day of work up front. No real regression in that linebacking core. And then you get to the secondary, and that's where opportunity starts to lie for teams to attack. The Seahawks are basically built from the back of the secondary in. They've got a great secondary, which would be even better had Jamal Adams not torn his quad and hurt his knee and been out since the first week of the entire year. But they have a very good secondary, good linebackers, and not a long, long days of work up front. They don't have a 10-sack guy on their team. They got 2 9.5-sack guys, but they don't have a 10-sack defensive line player on their roster this year. They are sort of the opposite of the Niners, conceptually anyways.
Yeah, but they're a little bit like the Legion of Boom teams who were built from the back forward.
Yes.
And I think Pete Carroll believes in that. And
he's a secondary coach by nature.
But also most teams in the NFL now want to beat you throwing the ball. This defensive alignment becomes problematic against a team like San Francisco, where they not only have a superb running back, but they have a very good second running back, and their philosophy is to beat you on the ground, not in the air. So that's going to be, I think, the hardest thing for the Seahawks to deal with. It's that the 49ers could actually just punish them with time of possession. And if they do that, it's going to be both a long day for them and a short day for me.
We got an awful lot still coming up, including a conversation with Steve Kerr live at 5 here on a Warriors Wednesday, brought to you by Friedman's Appliance, a trusted name in the Bay Area since 1922. Visit friedmansappliance.com today. When we come on back, I want to talk about some of the coaching origins of Pete Carroll and how they are baked, as we were just talking about, into the way that the Seahawks play. And obviously the 49ers are playing the Seahawks on Saturday afternoon for the right to move on in the NFL playoffs. We are also here on Damon and Ratto, brought to you by calhope.org.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Why does every recipe I try need 18 ingredients, including a jar of something paste I'll never use again but will sit in my fridge for 9 months? I just want dinner in the oven, fast. That's why I love Blue Apron's new one-pan assemble and bake meals. They send you fresh ingredients that are already chopped. All you do is put it all together and bake. That's it. No chopping, no weird leftovers, just delicious, easy-to-make meals. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Come to DSW for the shoes, stay for the fun. Because, let's be honest, if shoe shopping isn't fun, are you even doing it right? So go ahead, try something new. Try something different. Good different. Try something that feels like you. You know, the real you. And then definitely brag about it later. Because at DSW, you've got unlimited freedom to play. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
Find new customers on a platform that's here to stay. With TikTok for Business, anything is possible. If you've ever thought about advertising your business on TikTok, now is the time to do it. You can drive more customers to your website, sell products right in the app, and you can even use TikTok's creative tools to easily make content and find creators to help sell your products for you. Find new customers today. Just open your browser, type in getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads, and grow your business fast.
Now back to Damon and Ratto on 95.7 The Game.
Merch store. Oh, it's still open for business. Megan and Campbell bought a DPOY hoodie today. Way to get name checked, Megan. Thank you very, very much. 957thegameshop.com. Hear your name on the radio if you maybe buy a t-shirt. What a deal. What a bargain. What value we're providing for the Bay Area, Ray.
Keep me out of this.
Incredible value being provided for the Bay Area. We got ourselves playoff football. It starts Saturday at 1:30. And look, this rivalry, it gets a little bit of a reboot with this game. You know, it really does. And I think it gets a reboot with not only this game, but what this game can be the launching pad of. Now, Ray, if you want to just jump right back into the rivalry, I mean, let Seattle win this game. Whoa, that's
when I think the rivalry is rekindled. If they lose by anything more than something like really close, like a last second field goal or something, I don't think the rivalry's there, because I don't think most 49er fans view Seattle as the threat they used to be.
That's the wrong way to look at them.
Well, but if Seattle wins or makes it very difficult for them, I think it's probably going to be that again. In large part because neither the Rams nor the Cardinals will be participants in that for the next couple of years.
That's why I think no matter what happens here, we got a little bit of the first spark of this rivalry being rekindled, because the 49ers, the next 2-3 seasons, should be in the driver's seat in the NFC West just based on what's happened or what could happen in the next, you know, week or two, month or two, in terms of the Rams especially. But you got Seattle, which has a bevy of picks still coming in from Denver for the Russell Wilson trade. And they just, I mean, here they are. They're coming. They've reached the playoffs on the strength of a fantastic draft class. Their demise was greatly exaggerated. And as we were discussing yesterday, the omnipotence of the NFC West was probably overly sold, because things change fast, and things change real fast for, first of all, the LA Rams, because McVay and Stafford are now both huge, like, let's wait and see what their future hold, guys. McVay even more so than Stafford. And the Cardinals are back to being the laughable Cardinals. They need a new head coach, they need a new GM, and let's be totally honest about Kyler. He's in experiments, and those results are hard to predict from the Kyler Murray experiment, especially when you put it in a new test tube with a new GM and a new head coach and shake that thing up. And what does it look like? It looks like at least probably 2 or 3 years to get that right. So it really looks like the NFC West is back to being a these two teams conversation, not only Saturday afternoon, but for a year or two going forward. And I reserve the right to tell you that anything in the NFL can change on a dime.
Yeah, see, that's the thing that makes me hesitate about this, because I think these playoffs will determine what the next great rivalry is. Whether it's the Eagles, whether it's the Cowboys or the Vikings or the Seahawks, and it depends on who gives the 49ers the greatest amount of trouble. I mean, it might be that it ends up, the rivalry becomes Kansas City, because, you know, let's say they get to the Super Bowl. Let's say Kansas City wins again. Now that's the stalking horse. That's the team they can't get over. You know, I think rivalries in this kind of vacuum get created this month. And it might not be Seattle. It might very well be, because I think the way the playoffs set up now, winning your division is not the thing that it used to be. It's getting a good spot in the in the 1-7. You have to win your division to do that. But I have a feeling they're going to change that format pretty soon, so that Jacksonville being 9-8 doesn't get you a home game in the first week. I think that's coming. There's talk about it in the rules committee.
I don't have a problem with 9-8 getting a home game if you win your division with 9-8. I have a problem with 8-9 getting you a home game if you win that division. To me, one of the playoff tweaks that I would make is, all right, we're taking the same amount of teams, but you don't get a home game if you've won a division without a winning record. We'll give it to the next best record. That's the way I would play it if I were the commissioner, tweaking the format to feel a little more fair on its surface. And don't tell me that they're not willing to tweak playoff formats and who plays where, because we just saw them do it.
Oh, I wasn't going to tell you that. I mean, the only thing I was going to quibble with was whether the commissioner would do it, because he couldn't manage to get out of bed to make a judgment on Bills versus Bengals. He left that to Troy Vincent. I mean, no, that's one where you want the commissioner, who is allegedly the face of the company, to, you know, even if he has to do it on a Zoom call in his pajamas.
Man, $40 million a year. Text me the answer, Roger.
Yeah, not even text it. Just show yourself. Just say, hey, we're not going to do this. I mean, it should not have had to have been the player's call. Thank God it was. But it's a real statement about what the NFL believes, and that not only did they wait too long to make a decision that the players and coaches had already made for them, but that the commissioner wasn't there to do it. You know, even if it took an hour for them to get off their dime, that's where the commissioner is supposed to be there, and he couldn't be bothered.
We dropping a dereliction of duty on Roger here?
No, I think he doesn't care about anything except the things that make money for the company. It's not about, you know, what goes on in the field. I think he views having to attend games the way Rob Manfred does, as a gigantic pain in his ass. I mean, he just, you know, he's there to do two things: negotiate TV deals and negotiate CBAs.
And be a human shield for any flack coming from the media. And you jump in front of owners like you were trying to, you know, like you're a Secret Service agent protecting a president.
But even then, he doesn't show up for much of that until he's forced to.
Oh, he won't come out and poke his head out of his hole unless it's the State of the Union Super Bowl week. He has to do that press conference.
And even then, he's taken it from, I think, Friday to Wednesday night so that fewer people are there to grill him. You know, he's basically a guy, he's almost in hiding. You know, he's like commissioner in absentia.
I mean, it is how I prefer my commissioners overall. But when a problem arises, your bell should ring and you should be in front of it.
I mean, say what you want about Gary Bettman. You know, he's as unpopular as a commissioner is. But when there's a problem,
yo, he solves it. Check out Gary Bettman while his DJ revolves it.
Well, but I mean, he's the guy who stepped in to solve Arizona's temporary arena crisis when they got kicked out of their arena in Glendale.
Bang up job. What are they going to be playing in front of 400 people this year?
Yeah, they are, but
it actually looks like I've seen that hockey arena. It looks like a really fun place to go see the game. No, every single seat is on the glass.
Yeah, people come away from it feeling like, God, this is great fun. I mean, it's still 4,600 seats, but the players rave about it, especially given that they'd be drawing 4,600
anyway
in the old building. And we'll probably draw 4,600 if they ever get a new one built, or if they move to Houston, like most people think.
I'll say this. The NFL is a league that feels like on a night where you see something as scary on Monday Night Football last week, it squanders all of its goodwill. But, oh, the minute they got a everything's okay with Hamlin story, and by the way, everything is okay with Hamlin. What a great bit of news we have to share with you, that he's out of the Buffalo hospital. He not only has been transferred out of Cincinnati back to Buffalo, he's not even in the hospital anymore. He's now recovering at home. This guy is, it sounds like, going to live a normal life, if that's going to be
the
a
Bills
football.
Bills have listed him as day-to-day.
Yeah, if this is going to be a football player going forward, we'll see. But this is a living, breathing young man going forward, hopefully approaching old age. and decades from now, and he's got a normal life ahead of him. It's amazing how scary Monday Night Football was. But did you see the football machine that, you know, the at-large machine of football just fire, you know, print the We Love Hamlin t-shirts, and then make sure every single football fan on the planet knows that his very first words were, "Did we win?" Because, does that sell? Make sure everybody knows, did we win? That's what we're talking about in terms of football player. And they started selling these games and results matter more than anything as quickly as they could. The return, no group of fans will collectively assemble moments of anger and hurl them relentlessly at a sport like football fans, and then immediately forget whatever the gripes were the minute their next game kicks off. Every single time.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that is always amazing to me is how deftly the NFL avoids blame, but conversely, how deftly they take credit. I mean, they were trumpeting their protocols. You know, this is what saved, you know, Daron Hamlin. No, a trainer and doctors saved him. All right, stop saying that it was your system. Human beings saved his life. And he was one of the people who saved his life. There was a doctor yesterday who said the biggest reason why he's alive now is because he's a young athlete in excellent shape. You know, said most people who get commotio cordis like that, you know, that it's not a discussion. They, you know, tag him and bag him. You know, but the fact that he got immediate help and was in a position to use the help because he was in such good condition is probably the reason why he's alive today.
I've always recommended that if you're going to have a life-threatening medical anything, be a world-class athlete. It's a really good starting point.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same reason why Christian Eriksen, the soccer player who collapsed on the field, was saved, because there was somebody there within 60 seconds giving him CPR.
Those first moments of response time. And look, anyone who was a responder, they should be winning NFL weekly accolades, very special teams player of the week. I mean, I read a story today about the assistant trainer who's just like a young 24-year-old kid who did not leave Hamlin's side from the minute he went off the field in the ambulance to the minute he was pulling into his driveway back in Buffalo. Like, did not leave his side. So those are the people that really make a difference. And, you know, all the prayers that were offered up and putting good feelings out into the universe is never a bad thing. It's trained medical professionals with lightning response times, not thoughts and prayers, that saved him.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to debate, you know, what the Galactic Pixies did to help involve themselves in this, but boots on the ground doing.
Yeah, Galactic Pixies can be very, very important. Yeah. Certainly inspirational, and inspiration goes a very long way. It certainly probably helped his family through their darkest moments more than it did him. But man, it's a hell of a story, and thank God it officially now we can say we got a happy ending, to the point where we really don't even need to talk about it or bring it up anymore. But everything worked out great.
I think we all know how many times it's going to be brought up, like almost endlessly, because it'll be on every field. You know, everybody will be wearing a jersey. That's the theme for this postseason.
It'll be that theme in Buffalo. I think the rest of the NFL is like, yeah, this is our team now. We're not going to be pulling for anyone wearing another uniform.
No. But there's going to be all the trappings and the T-shirts and all the other stuff about it.
That's why we need Buffalo bounced early. Just get it out of there.
No. I don't think the Dolphins are going to be doing that. Not with Skylar Thompson.
Yeah, hey. Fade the public, Ray. Fade the public. I bet you we get a lot of action on Buffalo, which means we might be on the Dolphins. We'll figure that
out. Actually, there's already plenty of action on Buffalo. They opened at 11, they're at 13. And most of that is since the Dolphins said that Tua is not playing.
By the way, it really is a shame that Tua can't play. And let's be honest, you know, football means a lot to that guy. And this is, you know, how do you go ahead and make sure that your team extends you and signs you and isn't looking past you for a better opportunity? You go win playoff games and you do it on the road. And he's not going to have the opportunity to do that for all the right medical reasons that will deny him that opportunity. But still, it's an opportunity denied. Every single career that you look at in sports is a small sliver of time that you either are able to take advantage of, or for unforeseen reasons, or foreseen reasons, you're not able to take advantage of. It's a real shame. It's a real shame for the young man's career. And I know that there are bigger things than just his football career being discussed down in Miami as he looks to be the most concussion-prone player in the league right now. But it's just, it's too bad. It's too bad that he's not healthy, doesn't have to worry about these things, and can't just go play. They're probably going to lose anyways because, again, the Dolphins don't win games when it's under 40 degrees at kickoff.
Well, they also don't win games against superior teams. In fact, they don't win playoff games.
They really don't win playoff games. You're right about that.
It doesn't matter if they're on the surface of the sun. They're not winning.
I got a little Pete Carroll memory lane for you, man. Because I was going down the Pete Carroll rabbit hole and just sort of, you know, clicking on articles about him, local old articles about him, you know, how he went to, where did he go to college again? I totally forgot. I was just talking about the article I read about it and then I forgot.
UOP, was it not?
Yeah, it was Pacific. It was. Pete Carroll went to Pacific. In 1989, and I did not know this, Ray, maybe you did. In 1989, he was a candidate for the head coaching position at Stanford. But the position went to Dennis Green. He was the guy who finished second for the job. Pete Carroll would finish second to Dennis Green later in his career when the Minnesota Vikings were hiring their head coach that became Dennis Green. Apparently, Pete finished second for that job, too. Did you know that?
I did know that. I mean, I definitely know about the Stanford gig because Bill Walsh intervened strongly on Dennis Green's behalf.
Hey, Dennis Green knew every bit more about football probably at that point.
Yeah,
he
was a more qualified candidate at the time.
Yeah.
So it's not like Stanford picked the wrong guy.
No, either way, he had a really good coach. As I'm guessing most people in our audience know, but maybe they don't, Pete Carroll was the 49ers defensive coordinator in the 95 and 96 seasons. He had just been fired by the New York Jets after a 1-and-done 6-and-10 season, which we'll talk about in just a second. But you look at what happened to Pete Carroll and his defense in the 49ers when he was out here. So in 1995, the 49ers are coming off of a Super Bowl championship. They start slow, they end up rallying, and they win the NFC West, but it would mark the first of three consecutive years of playoff losses to the Green Bay Packers. It started with a stunning loss at Candlestick when the 49ers were 10-point favorites, but they turned the ball over four times, and they end up losing to Green Bay 27-17. I'm guessing a lot of you Niners fans have that built in as a memory you really don't like going back to, because that one officially hurt. In 1995, by the way, the 49ers squandered Jerry Rice's best season. Listen to the year that Jerry Rice had in 1995. He caught a career-high 122 balls for 1,848 yards and 15 total touchdowns. Ray, Jerry Rice, he was good, yes or no?
Depends on the year.
95 was a pretty good year for Jerry Rice. So now we're on to 1996. After the shocking home defeat in the opening round of the playoffs, or was that the divisional round? Yeah, the divisional round, because that's the way playoffs worked back then. So it's 1996 now. This is George Seifert's final season as head coach, and it would also end with a loss at Lambeau Field in the divisional round in 1997, because the Niners just had two good seasons. Pete Carroll is a head coaching candidate again, and he takes the Patriots head coaching job. By the way, Pete Carroll wasn't the reason why the 49ers kept losing to the Green Bay Packers for 3 years in a row, because they did lose the NFC title game that year at Candlestick. the reason why they lost, Ray, to the Green Bay Packers 3 years in a row? Brett Favre. Brett Favre was at the peak of his Brett Favrean powers, and the 3 years that they knocked the 49ers out of the postseason were the 3 years that Brett Favre was named the NFL MVP. So if you're going to run into somebody, run into a guy who's at the peak of his powers in a Hall of Fame career, and that's what happened to the Niners. They were good. Favre, for those 3 years in a row, was historically great.
Also, the 49ers committed 9 turnovers in those 3 games, including 5 the second year.
You're going to want to protect the ball a little bit better than that. By the way, that same rule applies for this Saturday afternoon against the Seahawks. So, from 95 to 97...
Oh, I'm sorry, I misspoke. It was 11 turnovers.
Oh, even worse. The 49ers lose to peak Brett Favre from 95 to 97. Pete Carroll was there for 2 of those years. Again, he didn't work out in New England. He got 3 years in New England before they jettisoned him, and he resurfaces at USC and rewrites Trojan history. So even as Pete failed, he kept on failing forward, because it might not have been an NFL job, but man, Pete was the name in all of coaching, NFL or otherwise, there when he was at USC. I mean, that's where he got his huge reputation back. You know, though, and I want to throw this out here because it's the truth. He kind of got screwed over with the New York Jets. He got a one-and-done year, and they were 6-10, which in the history of one-and-done coaches is usually not a one-and-done win total. 6-10 isn't that bad when you're trying to rebuild the New York Jets. So Pete's Jets team lost huge in the year that he had the job, Ray, in week 13, and I know that you'll remember this. Do you remember the Dan Marino spike game?
Oh, yeah.
That was the Jets' opponent in week 13 of that year. Pete called it a quote-unquote staggering defeat, and then the Jets would lose the remaining 4 games to finish 6-10. They had actually been respectable up into that moment. That moment, that fake spike play by the Dolphins and Dan Marino, was such a everybody saw it and talked about it moment. The back page of the New York Post and the tabloids, they never let go of it. And they talked about
it. It was the butt fumble of its day.
Without a doubt it was. It was even more embarrassing than that, because an entire defense had to be caught off guard, not just one man, one ball, one butt. I mean, it was bad. And it was a shocking defeat for sure. But the tabloids never let it go. The public basically came down that Pete can't get it done, and he was run out of town. He shows up as a really good coach for the 49ers, goes back to the NFL. Everyone says, he failed in New England. Now he'll never be a head coach again. He goes to USC, rewrites their history book, decides to run from the burning fire that was NCAA investigation swirling around his back-to-back national championships.
A fire that he helped set.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. He flicked the match as he was walking away from the exploding cinematic scene. I mean, it was the perfect time to leave for Pete. And he goes up to Seattle, and you'll see him on Saturday. But it's a hell of a story. By the way, did you know this about Pete Carroll? Did you know that he was on an Ohio State team coaching secondary for Earl Bruce? He was. He was the he was part of the Buckeyes team that made it to the 1980 Rose Bowl, where they lost to USC.
Dun, dun, dun.
Everything comes full circle in sports. We got the one and only Steve Kerr joining us at 5 o'clock, getting a real temperature check on his team. The first half obviously did not go the way they wanted it to. How's this road trip setting up? How is Steph feeling today? We'll get into all of it with Steve live at 5. In the meantime, Damon and Ratto here. We are brought to you by Fremont Bank, full service banking, no compromises.
To Damon and Ratto on 95.7 The Game.
Pete Carroll, he's coming to town Saturday. 49ers, Seahawks. Here we go, baby. Here we go. The road to Glendale, brought to you by Merriwest, by the way. Credit union working for you today, tomorrow, and together. Speaking of head coaches, We got the one and only Steve Kerr joining us live at 5. Until we get to Steve at 5 o'clock, Ray, at which point we'll probably talk Warriors with him. I want to get into the fact that, you know, Kyle Shanahan, Brock Purdy, this team, the 49ers, have built up quite a bit of goodwill. And I don't think that goodwill is going to vanish should they fail to win the Super Bowl. But if they were to lose to Seattle, oh, man, it would feel like such a disappointment. I mean, it would be a real, real wasted year. And we admit anything can happen in a football game. You know, I think that there's a 20% chance Seattle's in this. You said 25%, somewhere around there. It's just the way you got to respect an opponent that you're familiar with in the postseason. And, you know, for our own sake, Ray, because I know you got no rooting interests. I try to play it down the middle myself. I would, of course, like to see the city I live in. My wife is a huge Niner fan. My boys are going to be Niners fans. So, yeah, go ahead. Win as much as you can. It makes my family happy. It makes my city happy. That makes me happy. Makes our job here at 95.7 The Game happier. Maybe not you, Ray, but me. For our own sake, though, we need the Niners to win this game. We really do. Just so we're right not back to the same old questions like, can Kyle Shanahan really get his team to win the big one? And now we're reevaluating Brock Purdy, not based on the surprise that he was, but what the mission he failed to accomplish. Like, I don't want to go through all that again. If they don't win the Super Bowl, people will be able to live with that.
They won't.
Well,
no,
reasonable
it depends
people.
On how they lose it.
Reasonable people. I'm not saying they're. I'm just saying maybe they drop out in the end. They got to win at least one game here. They got to win this weekend, or all the good feeling washes out with all this rain.
Yeah, if they don't get to the conference final, I think there will be more disappointment among lunatics than pleasure. Because, one, it will mean that they failed to achieve what they did a year ago. Two, it will mean they didn't get to test themselves against the team with the best record in football. And it will mean that all the fantasies, you know, die a morning. So, but it grows exponentially. It's if they lose on Saturday, there will be hell to pay. And I will enjoy that.
I know you will.
If they lose to either Dallas or Minnesota in the second round, there will be some hell to pay. If they lose to the Eagles, I think people will be grumpy but okay, because I think the Eagles are slightly better. If they lose in the Super Bowl, unless they do what they did 4 years ago and, you know, give up three scores in the last quarter, I think people will tolerate it.
No one's going to be happy. You don't have to be happy. You're not supposed to be happy if you lose the Super Bowl. But, oh, the level of anger that we are going to have to deal with on Monday if they don't get this done on Saturday afternoon will be extreme. So how do they get it done? How would the Seahawks go about shocking the 49ers? When you start looking at their season on paper, some of their roster on paper, you can see paths to victory and you can see the roadblocks that are going to make it hard. It's like it's kind of all right there. To me, look out for Seattle on special teams all day long. I truly think Pete's going to try to steal a possession. A fake field goal, a fake punt, it's going to happen. I think it's coming. I think it's coming. Pete Carroll is just the guy to know. I haven't really got the horses to win this game just playing it straight up. I'm going to have to get cute. Getting cute against that defense, probably not as much of an opportunity as maybe trying to get cute on special teams, because that is a 49ers vulnerability. They're much better on special teams this year than they were last year. Much better. But that's still a place I'm looking to attack if I'm Pete Carroll. And look, if they're going to win this game, DK Metcalf becomes Randy Moss on Saturday. He's got talent. 90 catches, over 1,000 yards, 6 touchdowns this year. But the Niners really did a nice job holding DK Metcalf in check all season long. First game all the way back in week 2, 4 catches, 35 yards. That was it for DK Metcalf. Next game, more involved. He's got 7 catches, but only 55 yards in the second game. The Niners have done a good job handling a guy who's hard to handle. If they don't handle him, if Tyler Lockett who is the other 1,000-yard receiver on this Seattle team, one of those guys is going to have to go full on, oh, you were Cooper Kupp today level of games, I think, for the Seahawks to win. Plus that special teams play I'm talking about.
Plus the special teams play, plus Kenneth Walker keeping that defensive line off balance by gashing them between the tackles. And the two tight ends you referred to earlier, Noah Fant and Will Dissly. Because the 49ers know that they want to go to Metcalf and Lockett. They have been able to tee off on quarterbacks so that their whatever their shortcomings in the secondary are don't get exposed very much. But the Seahawks don't get to pick one or two guys and go, those guys are going to save us. They have to be able to, A, run the ball, and B, throw the ball both intermediately and deep. I mean, that's why their margin for error is so slim. They need Geno Smith to be both intrepid and flawless. It means no throwing the ball, you know, up into the sky, no throwing a bunch of interceptions. And that's where the weather comes in, because it's not only supposed to be wet on Saturday, winds are supposed to be 15 to 20 miles an hour, which makes throwing the ball that much more difficult. Because if it turns into a muddy slog, which it very well could, that's all in the 49ers' favor. They love to just grind games out and make it look like World War One.
It feels like it's definitely trench warfare, World War One reference there, but it is conceptually in the 49ers' favor. However, the underdog always wants the weather was bad game. And there is no doubt Seattle's the underdog here. So I think Seattle would be very happy with a muddy, sloppy track as well. I'll say this, Kyle and Brock Purdy, you know, it's hard to throw deep on a windy day. Well, throwing deep is not really the modus operandi of the passing game anyways. We've been saying it over and over again all year long. The Niners passing game basically takes place in a 15-yard box that starts 3 yards behind the line of scrimmage and goes to about 12 yards past the line of scrimmage. Every pass that is usually thrown and completed happens inside of that box. It's easier to operate a passing game in that box on a windy day than it is, you know, if you're a big vertical attack type of team. So maybe advantage Niners in that regard. But it's not going to be easy. There's just no doubt that it's not going to be an easy game. DK Metcalf at his press conference yesterday was talking about how, you know, rivalry. Yeah, back on, baby.
It's a tough matchup always. You know, they're probably one of our, in my mind, I think, biggest rivalry. But for this season, it's going to be our third time playing them. So all I know is it's hard to beat a team three times. So, you know, I'm looking forward to the matchup. I know the defense is going to be they're going to come ready. I know the offense is going to be ready. And, you know, I know we're going to be ready. So I'm just looking forward to the matchup.
I think the biggest thing that the 49ers are going to do is they're going to make the Seahawks take the run away. And I don't know who's done that this year. Not even New Orleans, who held them to 13 points. The 49ers are going to basically keep the ball on the ground until Seattle makes them throw. I mean, we saw them play Green Bay in a conference final where they threw the ball 8 times. And it wasn't because Kyle Shanahan was afraid to throw. It's because he knew the Packers couldn't tackle them. And I think he'd be willing to do that again on Saturday, because I think he knows that the percentage play is to let Christian McCaffrey be Christian McCaffrey and to let Elijah Mitchell be Elijah Mitchell. I think he's going to make it as simple as possible until the Seattle Seahawks do something about it. And I'm not sure Seattle can.
So running back Kenneth Walker III maybe has a little bit more of a game plan being installed by Pete based on what we saw the Raiders do to the 49ers, because they had quite a bit yards. They had a lot of success against the Niners. Overly aggressive pass rush in that middle screen game where Nick Bosa walked away saying Josh Jacobs is the best running back that we faced all year. Now, Kenneth Walker only had 27 catches on the season, but you can expect Pete to pull some middle screens after he watched it work when the Raiders did it against the 49ers. You know, smart people borrow, really smart people steal. And Pete Carroll is a really smart football coach. He is going to steal that element of a game plan, which now we got a game of checkers afoot because D'Amico Ryans and Kyle Shanahan know that he's going to steal that part of the game plan. So how much more are they looking for that part of the game plan? And now we have a contest afoot.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Why does every recipe I try need 18 ingredients, including a jar of something paste I'll never use again but will sit in my fridge for 9 months? I just want dinner in the oven, fast. That's why I love Blue Apron's new one-pan assemble and bake meals. They send you fresh ingredients that are already chopped. All you do is put it all together and bake. That's it. No chopping, no weird leftovers, just delicious, easy-to-make meals. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Ah, DSW, Earth Place of the Humble Brag. Here, the shoes are so good, no one would ever know how little you paid. If you didn't go telling everyone, that is. And with never-ending options for every style, mood, and occasion, all at really great prices, we'll definitely give you something to brag about. So go ahead, stock up on fresh sneakers from your favorite brands, or try those boots you always secretly knew you could pull off. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
Thanks to TikTok ads, I was able to open up a business with my childhood friend and even hire employees. My name is Julian, and I am one of the founders of The Snacks Lab. We are an exotic snack company. We import snacks from all over the world. We had over $100,000 in sales from our TikTok ads in the first month. So our orders went from 5 a day to over 250 orders a day. You definitely have to use TikTok ads.
TikTok for Business is helping owners like you reach new customers every day. Head over to getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTokAds.
Now back to Damon and Ratto on 95.7 The Game.
Pete Carroll, he's coming to town Saturday. 49ers, Seahawks. Here we go, baby. Here we go. The road to Glendale, brought to you by Merriwest, by the way. Credit union working for you today, tomorrow, and together. Speaking of head coaches, we got the one and only Steve Kerr joining us live at 5. Until we get to Steve at 5 o'clock, Ray, at which point we'll probably talk Warriors with him. I want to get into the fact that, you know, Kyle Shanahan, Brock Purdy, this team, the 49ers, have built up quite a bit of goodwill. And I don't think that goodwill is going to vanish should they fail to win the Super Bowl. But if they were to lose to Seattle, oh man, it would feel like such a disappointment. I mean, it would be a real, real wasted year. And we admit anything can happen in a football game. You know, I think that there's a 20% chance Seattle's in this. You said 25%, somewhere around there. It's just the way you got to respect an opponent that you're familiar with in the postseason. And, you know, for our own sake, Ray, because I know you got no rooting interests. I try to play it down the middle myself. I would, of course, like to see the city I live in. My wife is a huge Niner fan. My boys are going to be Niners fans. So, yeah, go ahead. Win as much as you can. It makes my family happy. It makes my city happy. That makes me happy. Makes our job here at 95.7 The Game happier. Maybe not you, Ray, but me. For our own sake, though, we need the Niners to win this game. We really do. Just so we're right not back to the same old questions like, can Kyle Shanahan really get his team to win the big one? And now we're reevaluating Brock Purdy, not based on the surprise that he was, but what the mission he failed to accomplish. Like, I don't want to go through all that again. If they don't win the Super Bowl, people will be able to live with that.
No, they won't.
Well, no, reasonable
people. It depends
people.
On how they lose it.
Reasonable people. I'm not saying they're... I'm just saying maybe they drop out in the end. They got to win at least one game here. They got to win this weekend, or all the good feeling washes out with all this rain.
Yeah, if they don't get to the conference final, I think there will be more disappointment among lunatics than pleasure. Because, one, it will mean that they failed to achieve what they did a year ago. Two, it will mean they didn't get to test themselves against the team with the best record in football. And it will mean that all the fantasies, you know, die a mourning. So, but it grows exponentially. It's, if they lose on Saturday, there will be hell to pay. And I will enjoy that.
I know you will.
If they lose to either Dallas or Minnesota in the second round... there will be some hell to pay. If they lose to the Eagles, I think people will be grumpy but okay, because I think the Eagles are slightly better. If they lose in the Super Bowl, unless they do what they did 4 years ago and, you know, give up three scores in the last quarter, I think people will tolerate it.
No one's going to be happy. You don't have to be happy. You're not supposed to be happy if you lose a Super Bowl. But, oh, the level of anger that we are going to have to deal with on Monday if they don't get this done on Saturday afternoon will be extreme. So how do they get it done? How would the Seahawks go about shocking the 49ers? When you start looking at their season on paper, some of their roster on paper, you can see paths to victory and you can see the roadblocks that are going to make it hard. It's like it's kind of all right there. To me... look out for Seattle on special teams all day long. I truly think Pete's going to try to steal a possession. A fake field goal. A fake punt. It's going to happen. I think it's coming. I think it's coming. Pete Carroll is just the guy to know. I haven't really got the horses to win this game just playing it straight up. I'm going to have to get cute. Getting cute against that defense... probably not as much of an opportunity as maybe trying to get cute on special teams, because that is a 49ers vulnerability. They're much better on special teams this year than they were last year. Much better. But that's still a place I'm looking to attack if I'm Pete Carroll. And look, if they're going to win this game, DK Metcalf becomes Randy Moss on Saturday. He's got talent. 90 catches, over 1,000 yards, 6 touchdowns this year. But the Niners really did a nice job holding DK Metcalf in check all season long. First game all the way back in week 2, 4 catches, 35 yards. That was it for DK Metcalf. Next game, more involved. He's got 7 catches, but only 55 yards in the second game. The Niners have done a good job handling a guy who's hard to handle. If they don't handle him, if... Tyler Lockett is, who is the other 1,000-yard receiver on this Seattle team. One of those guys is going to have to go full-on, oh, you were Cooper Kupp today level of games, I think, for the Seahawks to win, plus that special teams play I'm talking about.
Plus the special teams play, plus Kenneth Walker keeping that defensive line off balance by gashing them between the tackles. And the two tight ends you referred to earlier, Noah Fant and Will Disley, because the 49ers know that they want to go to Metcalf and Lockett. They have been able to tee off on quarterbacks so that their whatever their shortcomings in the secondary are don't get exposed very much. But the Seahawks don't get to pick one or two guys and go, those guys are going to save us. They have to be able to, A, run the ball, and B, throw the ball both intermediately and deep. I mean, that's why their margin for error is so slim. They need Geno Smith to be both intrepid and flawless. It means no throwing the ball, you know, up into the sky, no throwing a bunch of interceptions. And that's where the weather comes in, because it's not only supposed to be wet on Saturday, winds are supposed to be 15 to 20 miles an hour, which makes throwing the ball that much more difficult. Because if it turns into a muddy slog, which it very well could, that's all in the 49ers' favor. They love to just grind games out and make it look like World War One.
It feels like it's definitely trench warfare, World War One reference there, but it is conceptually in the 49ers' favor. However, the underdog always wants the weather was bad game. And there is no doubt Seattle's the underdog here. So I think Seattle would be very happy with a muddy, sloppy track as well. I'll say this, Kyle and Brock Purdy, you know, it's hard to throw deep on a windy day. Well, throwing deep is not really the modus operandi of the passing game anyways. We've been saying it over and over again all year long. The Niners passing game basically takes place in a 15-yard box that starts 3 yards behind the line of scrimmage and goes to about 12 yards past the line of scrimmage. Every pass that is usually thrown and completed happens inside of that box. It's easier to operate a passing game in that box on a windy day than it is, you know, if you're a big vertical attack type of team. So maybe advantage Niners in that regard. But it's not going to be easy. There's just no doubt that it's not going to be an easy game. DK Metcalf at his press conference yesterday was talking about how, you know, rivalry. Yeah, back on, baby.
It's a tough matchup always. You know, they're probably one of our, in my mind, I think, biggest rivalry. But for this season, it's going to be our third time playing them. So all I know is it's hard to beat a team three times. So, you know, I'm looking forward to the matchup. I know the defense is going to they're going to come ready. I know the offense is going to be ready. And, you know, I know we're going to be ready. So I'm just looking forward to the matchup.
I think the biggest thing what the 49ers are going to do is they're going to make the Seahawks take the run away. And I don't know who's done that this year. Not even New Orleans, who held them to 13 points. The 49ers are going to basically keep the ball on the ground until Seattle makes them throw. I mean, we saw them play Green Bay in a conference final where they threw the ball 8 times. And it wasn't because Kyle Shanahan was afraid to throw. It's because he knew the Packers couldn't tackle them. And I think he'd be willing to do that again on Saturday, because I think he knows that the percentage play is to let Christian McCaffrey be Christian McCaffrey and to let Elijah Mitchell be Elijah Mitchell. I think he's going to make it as simple as possible until the Seattle Seahawks do something about it. And I'm not sure Seattle can.
So running back Kenneth Walker III maybe has a little bit more of a game plan being installed by Pete based on what we saw the Raiders do to the 49ers, because they had quite a bit yards. They had a lot of success against the Niners. Overly aggressive pass rush in that middle screen game where Nick Bosa walked away saying Josh Jacobs is the best running back that we faced all year. Now, Kenneth Walker only had 27 catches on the season, but you can expect Pete to pull some middle screens after he watched it work when the Raiders did it against the 49ers. You know, smart people borrow, really smart people steal. And Pete Carroll is a really smart football coach. He is going to steal that element of a game plan, which now we got a game of checkers afoot because D'Amico Ryans and Kyle Shanahan know that he's going to steal that part of the game plan. So how much more are they looking for that part of the game plan? And now we have a contest afoot. You know what I mean? And this is where coaching matters. But you are going to see Pete attack that part of the field. Another place that you would think, hey, the 49ers got an advantage there is this is a team that starts two very good rookie tackles, Charlie Cross and Abraham Lucas. One guy was the 9th overall pick of the first round out of Mississippi State. That's Cross. Lucas, the third rounder out of Washington State. And, you know, how do you like these rookie chances against the 49ers defensive line? Well, just based on that scenario, defensive line versus rookie sounds really good to me. But these guys hold up. They're good. They're very good. They're a huge part of the reason why the Seahawks are in this game to begin with. So it's going to be a fascinating matchup, man.
Yeah, I think that, you know, you were talking about inside screens. I think that's where the tight ends come in. Because, as you said, Kenneth Walker is not a pass catcher. Travis Homer is not really a pass catcher. And you can't steal what you can't hold. And I think that's the one thing that Seattle, that Pete Carroll knows more than anything else. You cannot look at something that another team's defense doesn't do well and go do that if you don't have the personnel to do it. So he's going to have to do that another way, and I think that's where Fant and Disley come in.
You're probably right. That tight end middle screen looks like he's blocking, just flashes, and then pulls out between center guard. Yeah, I mean, yeah, that probably is something. I'm looking at it this way. I bet you Kyle Shanahan's thought of that.
if he's thought of everything, because he's used tape on what Pete Carroll likes to do over and over again. But he also knows that you cannot do what you don't have the personnel to do.
DJ Dallas, more of a pass catcher. He's listed as questionable. What's DJ Dallas got receiving yards? Or
126 this year.
Okay, so not really.
19 targets. So they're not doing a lot of passing out of the backfield.
Maybe they're saving it for the postseason, right?
Yeah, that's what they do. No, I think they're very limited in what they can do in the passing game, and it's limited to the two superb wide receivers and the tight ends.
By the way, boys and girls, children of all ages, let me welcome you to your 5 o'clock hour.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Total, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Thanks to TikTok ads, I was able to open up a business with my childhood friend and even hire employees. My name is Julian, and I am one of the founders of The Snacks Lab. We are an exotic snack company. We import snacks from all over the world. We had over $100,000 in sales from our TikTok ads in the first month. So our orders went from 5 a day to over 250 orders a day. You definitely have to use TikTok ads.
TikTok for Business is helping owners like you reach new customers every day. Head over to getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads.
There's nothing like gaining a fresh perspective from experts who've seen it all and have the wisdom to prove it. With MasterClass, you can learn from the best to become your best. With plans starting at $10 a month, billed annually, you get unlimited access to over 200 plus classes taught by the world's best business leaders, writers, chefs, and more. With MasterClass, you get thousands of bite-sized lessons across 13 categories that can fit into even the busiest of schedules. And the classes really make a difference. 3 in 4 surveyed members feel inspired every time they watch MasterClass. And 83% of surveyed members have applied something they've learned from MasterClass to their lives. MasterClass always has great offers during the holidays, sometimes up to as much as 50% off. Head over to masterclass.com/audio for the current offer. That's up to 50% off at masterclass.com/audio. masterclass.com/audio. This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.